This is Things I Wish I Knew, the podcast from Thinking Faith, a work of the Jesuits in Britain. I'm Julia, I'm in my early 30s, and I'm living in a young adult community run by the Jesuits in London. We all live hectic lives and often don't get time to reflect on what's happening both to us and around us. So this podcast is meant to help you to take a moment to stop and think about where you are, where you're going, and where your relationship with God fits into it all. So every week I'm meeting a new guest who tells me about something they've experienced which changed their life forever. And by talking about the things they wish they'd known at the time, we'll explore the idea that God is in all things. Today I'm speaking to Dominic. Dominic is a solicitor living in London, working in immigration and personal injury law. And he was raised Catholic and born through donor conception and raised by his single mother, not knowing who his father was. And he shares with us in the episode how he reached out to his father and how he wished he'd done that sooner. So Dominic, when did you know you were donor conceived?
So I've always known. My mother says that when I was two, I asked her, "So where's Dominic's daddy?" And she had to explain to me in terms a two-year-old could understand. So I don't remember that, obviously, but I feel like I've always known.
Yeah, as you said, at two, you don't remember that, so you probably don't remember how you feel, but how did it feel growing up knowing that?
I think perhaps at the time, I never felt a terrible lack. I think perhaps as I've, you know, met my father now, perhaps as I might have children of my own, I'll see what I was kind of lacking and missing. But at the time, not so much really. I felt quite content. I think I quite liked having something a bit unusual about me. I quite liked that, in a sense, being a bit different. I think that was maybe somehow quite satisfying, somehow, feeling I was maybe a bit special.
Was there a point in your life where you wanted a father figure, though?
I had a lot of strong male role models around, so I feel that was there. But I think as I've got older, looking back, I think maybe more as I look into my teens and my 20s, I can see now how when you're coming into that awkward stage of coming into manhood, what it is to be a man, that maybe I lacked it in that sense. But not so much at the time. It wasn't something I was so aware of, I don't think.
And how do you think you could have benefited from it then?
I suppose just having someone to go to for advice, having that kind of, just generally, just having someone who's very close to you, who wants the best for you and knows what it is to have grown up into manhood and advise you in that way.
You mentioned your mother. So your mother was, you were raised by a single mother and not knowing who your father was. How was that, and how do you think that affected who you are now?
I'd say my relationship with my mother has been, we have a very close relationship. And, it was only just me and her growing up. So it's a very kind of, it's a relationship that's very direct, it's very open, we say what we mean what we say, really, and we kind of really know each other very well in that sense, I think, in a way that maybe other people don't have.
It's a great thing when you can have a direct relationship with someone, where you can tell them how you're feeling, and they tell you, because then you're not always questioning their, motives or what they're thinking, and that must be freeing in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And so you grew up Catholic. Was that an easy thing to do, or was that challenging in different ways?
Certainly. It certainly felt easy as a child. I was, I think my mother took me to the local parish priest, who was Father Tom Heenan. He was very accepting of me. My mother sort of talked about circumstances of my conception. So that was never an issue there. And I felt very at home in that parish community, which was, a very kind of inner city, quite underprivileged parish community with a real rich sense of community. Incredibly multicultural. And my mother and I often think, there's people we know that we would never have known and never have got to know had it not been for the Catholic Church. So, yeah, in that sense, that felt very easy. And to be honest, I don't know, growing up and in school, it was a deprived place. There were kids with all kinds of family lives. So I didn't feel in that sense, certainly in primary school. I think maybe going into secondary school, I went over to Cardinal Vaughan in Holland Park, where the social profile was a bit different. It was a bit more suburban, the kids perhaps coming from more conventional families. I think maybe I felt like I stuck out a bit more then, but I think more perhaps in a kind of a socioeconomic sense than in a faith sense, I think.
Coming on to, you found your biological father. Can you tell us of why you decided to find him and what that process was?
I think it was always something I wanted to do, to find him. But I think growing up, from a young age, to be honest, I think from being quite a small child, I tried to teach myself and train myself to just make my peace with perhaps never knowing him. I think I had some degree of faith deep down that I would find out. But I think I just tempered that with saying, you know, don't get your hopes up. Do you know what I mean? So in that sense, it was all tempered. Now, if you were sort of donor conceived in the 90s, early 2000s, that was something you had to make your peace with. However, in the past couple of decades, the rise of consumer DNA testing has completely changed the game. It's effectively done away with a lot of donor anonymity. So it's funny, really, looking back, it was only in 2020 I did a DNA test with Ancestry.com. So I was 27 when I did that, which is remarkably late, really. I think I must have seen the adverts for ages, and I think I thought to myself, oh, I must get around to doing that. Maybe I'll find something. But again, I think I'd tempered my hope so much that I didn't sort of think, oh, I must do that. Maybe I was scared to hope in it too much. But then I did the test. I remember.
What prompted you at that particular point, though, to do it?
I think I must have just seen an advert at some point and thought, all right, I know I should do this now. I remember discussing it with my mother a number of times, saying, oh, you should do that. Oh, yeah, maybe I should do. And it was always there. It was something I wanted to find out. But it was, I think I'd tried to temper my hope so much that it just, what I could find out had never properly, hadn't quite occurred to me.
And did your mum know anything about the donor?
Yeah, so we had some basic information, year of birth, I think his height, his build, some of his interests, like interest in sport. I knew that he'd been a postgraduate student at the time. So
did you kind of have this image in your head of who he was going to be? Or did you just, because you said about tempering it, so you didn't really want to get your hopes up too much?
I suppose I did, in a sense, perhaps. It's hard to say. I suppose it was very vague, but I suppose you do have some kind of image in your mind about what your father. I think he's not a million miles away from what I thought he would be, actually, so in a sense.
In 2020, you took the test after a while, and then what happened?
So I remember it was a work day, and the results came in. You know, I'd sent in a DNA sample and gone all the way to America and then came back. It was the beginning of a work day and it had come up and it just came up with his initials. But I did a bit of rooting around and sort of worked out who he was, and I sent a message, and that evening I heard back from him, and it was just, amazing. Just suddenly feeling that. I remember my mother saying just that evening, because I went home to hers and had some dinner myself with her and my now wife. And my mother just said him, you know, she was telling her sisters and people and saying, you know, Dominic's like standing a foot taller, she said. He just seems a lot more fulfilled suddenly.
And how do you think it felt for him?
I think we were both working out what it meant. So we only exchanged a couple of emails then. And then it was for about 6 months, I didn't hear from him. He had some own personal things going on. And I didn't want to pressure it again. I didn't want to, like, you know, I was trying to keep it cool. But then what ended up happening was a half-sibling of mine, a half-sister, came on to Ancestry, and that kind of changed things up, and she got in touch with him. And then through that, I reached out to him again, and we picked up again, and it was all fine. I think initially he's just talked about being very happy. And I think I was looking back, he'll say this, I was perhaps too cautious with him. I think that my own kind of, I was, you know, I'm there thinking like, oh, you know, you've waited this since the age of two, don't blow this, just play it cool, whatever. In a sense, I should have thrown myself into it more, I think, you know, because then he was also thinking like, oh, it'd be lovely to get to know him, but, you know, this isn't part of the deal, like I kind of signed away my rights, so I mustn't impose. So I think maybe we were both thinking like that, and it really did us good to have my sister come out of the woodwork, as it were. And
so were you the first of his donor children to be matched with him?
Yes.
So then you have a donor sister, and that brings on a whole different dynamic for you.
So I think the first thing needs to be said is I'm unusual as a donor conceived person in that I've grown up knowing. I've looked at some stats, and it would appear, it's impossible really to know for certain, but it would appear about 90% of donor conceived people are raised not knowing the truth of their origins. You know, they're basically raised by their biological mother and her partner, who's usually an infertile man. So met three siblings now. I don't think any of them grew up knowing. Well, I haven't met them, but, you know, I'm aware of them. So it's, my context is quite different, and I come to it from a different place. And I think in that sense, you know, my, when siblings come forward, you know, they suddenly can be effectively having an identity crisis about what's going on. They're like, what the hell is this? So they'll kind of throw them. Well, it depends. I mean, some people can retreat from it and think, what's this? But other people can throw themselves in and say, what's this? Whereas I think maybe I was cautious because I'd had like a, you know, a lifetime, well, not a lifetime, but 20 odd years to get used to the idea of, you know, of it. Whereas I think maybe when my sister found out, she was like, right, okay, who's this? You know, and would get straight in contact.
So I guess you've gone from like always knowing about your father, but not knowing who he is, and growing up with your mum. And did you have an extended family as well?
Yeah. So my mother's one of seven. So.
Oh, wow. So there were lots of aunties and
uncles around. And say I grew up with cousins who were 20 odd years older than me. I was closer in age to their children.
And then you found you've got this other family.
Yeah.
Later on in life. And how do you process that? How do you, I wouldn't even know where to begin to process that.
I think I've always said that the whole process has been actually a feeling of normality. I think I was saying before how when I was a young child, I liked the feeling of being a bit different and special. And in a sense, finding it all about, I've lost slightly of that, some of that. You know, maybe when people used to ask me, oh, and who's your father? I would have to be evasive and think, oh, I'm a bit odd, aren't I? Whereas now, you know, he's this American, you know. It's just suddenly very normal. You know, I never expected to have any relationship. And then, you know, I'm the last person I thought this would happen to. Suddenly, oh, there I am. I had my father at my wedding, which seemed bizarrely conventional for me in my whole setting. So it's, I don't know. I laugh with my half-sibling. For her, she was brought up in a very conventional setup, and then suddenly this has happened and she feels, oh wow, I've really left behind, you know, heteronormativity, and suddenly I have this very complicated family history that I have to explain, and I never expected to have. Whereas for me, it's become a lot easier to explain now.
And so now you've met your father.
Yes.
How was that the first time you met him?
So we first met when he was coming to London for my wedding, actually, and that was in September last year. Met in Victoria Station as he'd got off the Gatwick Express with my half-sister. They both came.
Had they met before?
Yes, yeah. So she lives in the Americas as well. So they meet up a fair bit. And yeah, that was, I suppose it was a bit whirlwind in a sense. I was in the middle of doing my wedding, but we did have a couple of days together and we had a really nice time. And we speak very often on Zoom. But yeah, we had a couple of days together. And then one of the things we did was my father and my half-sister, they came to just have dinner with me and my mum in the flat I'd grown up in. And again, that was a kind of a suddenly come into some kind of conventionality suddenly, that we'd been this, you know, sort of quite unusual single mother with a kid for years, and then suddenly, you know, we have father around the table and my sibling, and it's suddenly like, you know, just...
There must be a big change to your mum as well.
Yeah. Like, she's been overjoyed by it all. And I think she's glad that I have a, you know, a bigger support network. She doesn't perhaps feel as on her own about it at all. And, you know, she knows I have that support to...
How did you make the decision that you went from found out about your father, found out about your biological sister, and then you had them at your wedding? What kind of was your thought process, your discernment, your kind of mindset that took you into that place?
I suppose, again, it was, I was always wanting to be, you know, in those early days, I was wanting to be careful, don't freak anyone out, you know, don't presume that people see you as my son and that I should see him as my father, you know, like just carefully. But it was, you know, we really got on. And I remember there was this real feeling of closeness, and I felt somewhat out of a limb and just saying, you know, it's got to a, and I was kind of sort of tentative, and you know, it's, I don't know, it almost started, it's felt like the beginning of a relationship when like, oh, you know, how much do we want to commit, or do you know what I mean? Now, in that sense, so it was wary, but I just said, you know, it's got to the point where I feel like I have to have, not in a feeling of like bland obligation, but in a, out of a genuine sense of closeness, I want you at my wedding, you know, and I asked them both, and they were both really happy to come. And what's been wonderful about having them there is it's created that kind of, like now we feel more like a family, in the sense we have this happy memory family member. Oh, yeah, we were at Dominic's wedding. It's less abstract now, the idea of us having this family relationship. It's like, they were both at my wedding.
And I know you've said that you made sure that they had a place at the wedding. So they didn't just feel like they came in and sat at the back, like you brought them to the front.
Yeah, well, my attitude was, look, if we're going to do this, let's do this properly. And I just felt it would have been ridiculous to have my father and sister sat at the back and people saying, oh, how do you know the groom? Oh, I'm his father. Do you know what? I just thought, bring them up and if we're going to do this, then steer into it.
So what do you wish you'd known before you'd met your father?
It's hard to say, really. I think perhaps, yeah, I'd wish I'd known that, you know, maybe to be less cautious and to throw myself into it in that sense. I think that's something. But we're there and everything's wonderful now. But I think in that sense that kind of caution I had, that was really, as I say, just, you know, a lifetime of just thinking, oh, play it carefully now, don't be overdoing it. Maybe I should have thrown more caution to the wind.
That's really interesting because we've done a few of these interviews and nearly all of our guests have talked about wish they'd done it sooner.
Yeah.
Like wish they'd thrown themselves into it sooner.
Yeah. I suppose there is that. I've talked about how, you know, it took me till I was about 27 to do it, but to find out. But I don't know, in a sense, there's part of me that, of course, you know, wishes I could have found out sooner and could have been part of my life earlier. There's also part of me that thinks, I don't know, I kind of did it in the right moment of my life. I was, you know, out of university, getting on for 30. I was sort of, as a trainee solicitor, so I was nearly there qualified. I felt like, not a finished article, I would never be so arrogant as to say that, but quite a kind of a developed human being who could then take on a new relationship. It would have been wonderful to have my father there earlier to support me, but I don't know if I'd have been aware of it in my teens or when I'm in my university days and I was in a bit more of a struggle in my life about who I was. I'm sure he would have supported me, but I don't know, it would have been, again, maybe I'm being too cautious, but I think it would have been a lot to place on someone to kind of steer me through that. I feel like I came to it as quite a settled, but I mean, my relationship with my father feels like, in some ways, like a relationship of two adult men, in a way. And I quite like that, in a sense.
I was just thinking that often parents and children have that difficulty of jumping from being a parent and a child to being an adult and adult, and how to like balance that out. But I guess in some ways you've skipped over that awkward stage.
I have skipped over it. I think I've said I feel this less, although it's something I do think about. I think my father certainly feels it, a feeling of missing out, that he'll see pictures of me as a child and a baby and think he feel like he missed out on that whole part of my life.
Yeah, has he learned anything about you or any particular milestones or a particular thing that's happened in your life that he wish he'd been there for?
Generally, yeah. Lots of things, I suppose, just growing up. I think we would have really got on. I was the sort of kid who would really get on with adults and have a chat and talk, so I think there's that. I mean, one particular thing that happened to me is when I was 17 in 2009. This was during the swine flu epidemic, actually. I got swine flu and I fell ill with this superbug called PVL, which like was a form of pneumonia. I ended up in a coma for a month. I received the last rites, like it was, you know, 50-50, I think, for a while. But I recovered. But that was just as I was going into upper sixth, so I had to take the year out, and it was a long recovery. You know, and there was a lot of trauma there. There was a lot of psychological trauma to recover from out of that, and anxiety and things like that, as well as physical recovery. And my father is a psychologist. I'm sure it would have been wonderful to have him around there.
So you talked about that kind of challenge of missing out on things. Have there been any other challenges that you have both faced or you in particular faced?
I don't think so. It's been quite an easy process. It feels very natural now with him. I think we certainly feel like we could say anything to each other now and just be very open about what we're thinking, what we're feeling, you know. If anything ever comes up around, you know, the whole kind of weirdness of how do we negotiate this kind of relationship in these kind of strange circumstances, we're just very open about it and we'll just talk and discuss and say, I'm thinking this, what do you think? And
that's really good, because particularly because we were saying earlier how you were the first of the donor children. So as others are coming out, it's good for them to be able to see that open relationship as well. So you've now got three that you found out about? Or
yes, three others that I've found out about.
And have you got different relationships with them?
Yeah. So it's my sister who's really keen to be open. I think the other two are a bit more reticent. You know, what does this mean? And that kind of thing. This one I've talked to a bit. So it all depends. People relate to it differently. And as I say, it's my experience is, I think, you know, listeners should understand my experience is actually the minority of having grown up knowing. Vast majority don't. So discovery of this kind of stuff is often a big bombshell. And at the same time as people are meeting these new siblings and they're also going through a identity crisis, and it can be an incredibly difficult time.
Yeah. And with that really difficult time, just my mind got blown about like your whole identity kind of changing when you're like late 20s or early 30s or whenever it is. But what piece of advice, or I guess it's not advice, it's advice multiple, would you give to somebody who is going through a particular the same situation, but maybe the more like the 90% rather than your particular situation?
Yeah. I think they need to try and step out of, you know, that crisis and just think, this is kind of necessary information I need to find. I can think of donor-conceived people I've heard of who are kind of terrified to pry even further. And I would actually say, no, get your ancestry test. You know, you can set it to completely anonymous, but just get it up so you can just see what's out there. And you take control of the process. And you don't have to be pals with everyone, and you don't have to be sending Christmas cards, say, to everyone. But just, I think it's just see it as a necessary task to be able to map out all your close relatives and see where they are and think, okay. And then if you want to be developing, you know, sibling relationships, that's a bonus. But I think that's the main thing. Just see it as a necessary task.
Is there anything you feel like you've learned about yourself having now met your father?
I think so, yeah. In a sense, I can see perhaps where some parts of me have come from. I think my mother's side are quite passionate people, quite, you know, really wear their heart on their sleeve. Not that my father's side lack passion, but they're quite a lot more cerebral as people, I think. And, you know, my father's a psychologist, so is his father. There's a lot of academia there.
Do you feel like your faith fits into this story, or is it in a separate box from it?
I think it does. It's certainly been there to try and, like, you know, bring that before the Lord, our kind of family, you know. And obviously, you know, it must be said that, you know, it's perhaps not on some level the church's ideal of family, but it is what it is. And I think all families are vehicles of divine love, and just being able to bring that before the Lord, I mean, physically at my wedding, and know that that's valid, I think.
So how has your faith changed and developed since you kind of 2020, when you discovered your father?
I mean, I'm certainly grateful to God for having this, you know, not only for just finding out, but having this wonderful relationship there. And it's interesting as well. My father's family are quite very religious, so it's been interesting having that to relate to and feeling accepted in that way. And I think, as I say, I think it, you know, perhaps transforms my own thoughts about fatherhood. Maybe my own devotion to St. Joseph has changed, you know what I mean, in a sense. I'm now, say, looking forward to... I'm going to be very interested, if and when I have children of my own, to look at how this kind of affects my thinking and my approach. And I know I have that and my own model of fatherhood, I think.
That will affect your view of how you'll be a father. But I guess it's also exciting that your future children will get to know their grandfather
as
well.
I know, I've often thought that you know, I didn't grow up knowing my father, but my children will. And I'm sure for them, for many years, it'll just feel very normal. Like, oh yeah, granddad, whatever. It'll only be as they get older they'll understand the story of how I found out about him and be and they'll themselves, I'm sure, feel very grateful that it's all come together.
I was going to say, I guess they won't be two-year-olds asking where their grandfather is because they know him. So before you were talking about being welcomed by his family, can you tell me a bit more about that experience?
Certainly, yeah. So when I went over in May to the United States to visit him and completely welcome. We had a sort of a big family get together to welcome me. It was wonderful. At my grandmother's house, and my auntie was there, and her children and their children. So it was wonderful and just felt very natural. As I say, it's I always say this feeling has been more of a settling into normality. Nothing has ever felt surreal. It's just felt like, oh, this is my normal now. And just being welcomed and to be able to sit around the dinner table and chat away.
One final question for you. What are you most grateful for, or things you're grateful for of this experience that you've had now that you've met your biological father?
I'm very grateful for the openness that I can share with my father and my sibling, that we can speak very frankly with each other, that perhaps a lot of my caution I can let go of. And any kind of awkwardness over this, what is admittedly quite a strange arrangement, we can just talk through. And I think that's very important. So
that's really good to hear. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for listening to Things I Wish I Knew. I know this episode is going to stay with me because of the way Dominic talks about him finding himself through finding his father. Please do recommend this episode to your friends. And how about you? We'd love to hear how Dominic's story resonated with you. And why not also tell us if you're facing an experience you wish you knew how to look at differently. It might just be something we can help with. You can write to me at jcochran@thinkingfaith.org and find out more about the themes we've discussed today at thinkingfaith.org.